President Carter?
Yes, ma'am.
You're on the line with Preston Westmoreland.
How do you do, Mr. Carter? We're out here in Arizona today.
Preston, as good as things in Phoenix.
You know, we're glowing in that World Series, beating the Yankees, you know.
I was so happy, man. You don't know how happy I was when you all won.
Well, you know what? We had it was kind of an interesting thing, Mr. Carter. The Diamondbacks were kind of the bad guys here because everybody wanted New York to win, because they needed the jolt after the World Trade Center disaster. And we kind of came out as we're the evil snakes out here, you know.
No way. That was a wonderful victory. I happen to have been in Nicaragua, supposedly holding an election down there for them, but I couldn't keep my eyes off television. And about 90% of us celebrated when the Diamondbacks won. Well, I was really proud of what the team did.
Well, very good. We are too, Mr. President. Well, I thank you for joining us for a few minutes. We're going to roll a little bit of tape here and talk about planes. And I just think those small towns are very, very magical, so I can see what the lure is for a place like Plains.
Well, you have to come down to Plains and see us. We just got just as nice a town. We have 700 people there, most of whom are kin to either me or Rosen, since both of our families have been there, who were born in the 1700s. And we haven't gotten very far in life, I guess. But it was a real pleasure for me to write about Christmas, not only in Plains, but, you know, when I was in the Navy, when I was governor, when I was president, and so forth. And I think this book will be one that will show folks that no matter where you live in life or no matter how many changes take place in your life, no matter whether you have sorrows or happiness or failures or success, there's some certain things that never change. And those things, I think, are best exemplified Christmas with love and meeting with people that you really care for and a commitment to peace in the world. So we have a memory that that we can cherish from one Christmas to another.
Did you, you were born, I think, in 1924 and raised
right.
up in Plains as a young boy right before the Depression. Was the Depression, did it have an effect on Plains at all?
Oh, yes, like everyone else. In fact, I wrote a book called An Hour Before Daylight last year that described my life in Plains, actually on a farm near Plains, when I didn't have any white neighbors at all, and when the average per capita income in that area was just $75 per year. So, you know, the Christmases then and the rest of the year as well, there wasn't any material benefits to life much except just, stability and families and so forth. But out of that, I think, came a number one bestseller on the New York Times list for, I think, 5 or 6 weeks in a row. But it only took my life up to the age of 17 when I went off to the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
So this book, Christmas in Plains, kind of takes up there. And it describes, for instance, the years that I was in the White House, two of which were even more traumatic for America than the terrorist attacks have made it this year.
Now, the Christmas with the Iranian hostages had to be the worst, Mr. President.
Well, it was, not only for me, but for the country. There was hardly a community in America that didn't have yellow ribbons tied around trees because our hostages were being held by terrorists. We didn't know if they were being tortured or not, if they would live or not. And ultimately, our prayers were answered, and every hostage came home safe and free. But that was just one of the Christmases that I describe in the book.
Did you get a lot of snow down there? Because I have the biggest trouble feeling like the holidays without snow. I was raised up in the Northeast, and we had a lot of snow there, and we go out sledding, you know, and the hot cider and things.
No, we never had snow in Plains on Christmas, except once in my 77 years. But we did spend some Christmases in Connecticut, some in New York, some in Maryland, and some in Virginia when I was in the Navy. So we knew about Christmas with snow.
Didn't you tell your godmother to bring a snowball one time?
Yeah, one time my godmother, who was on the way to Cleveland, Georgia, with a patient, she was a nurse like my mother, she came by the house to ask us what we wanted her to bring us for Christmas, and I and my sisters immediately shouted out, a snowball. So she came back a week or two later, and she had bought a very large white marble. And we put it on the shelf, and it was several years later before we realized that this was not a petrified snowball.
Yeah.
That was one of the, you know, disillusionments that we had as children. But that shows how innocent we were in those days.
Well, I was thinking about there was a part in the book. I live up in the desert north of Phoenix, and one of the things we cut off and kill is mistletoe because it attaches to trees and bushes and kills them gradually. And so it's something we cut off and then we bury it or throw it out in the garbage can. But you had to go get mistletoe for the house, and usually it's up at the top of the trees, you know?
It's in the top of the trees, and it's out on the very end of limbs, so you can't climb out and get it. So the best way to get mistletoe, as I describe in the book, is just to get a gun and shoot into the mistletoe and hope a few sprigs fall out. In our part of the country, maybe around Phoenix too, if you can catch a girl under the mistletoe, it gives you a right, at least during the Christmas season, you know, to steal a kiss without maybe being slapped too hard.
There you go. But you got to put the gun down.
You have to put the gun down.
I could use you with a gun in my backyard to get some of those hard-to-find mistletoe, Mr.
President.
By
the way, I'm going to be in Phoenix, as you may know, tomorrow at Sam's at Gilbert. I guess that's very close to Phoenix, right?
Sam's? Oh, that's great. Listen, you are a great humanitarian. By the way, I was looking online at Amazon.com, Mr. President, and they're giving this a 4.5-star review out of 5 stars. But once in a while, those Republicans review the books, you know. It cost you a little bit. How do you feel about this incredible wave of patriotism that we're seeing right now in this country? They're mixing religion with patriotism. I've never seen God Bless America sung so many times. I fly around in my car with an American flag on, and I think it's just wonderful to see.
Well, it is, and as I mentioned earlier, we had the same kind of spirit of unity and prayer and Thanksgiving and so forth while the hostages were being held, as we do now. In fact, I was in New York last night, and I got up early this morning on the way to the JFK airport, and I went by the Ground Zero site. And stood there talking to some policemen. They've now, you know, moved 900,000 tons of debris out. This still looks absolutely horrible. But I think that terrorist attack on us has, as you say, tended to bring Americans together as we came together when the hostages were being held by terrorists.
This is a cycle that goes on and on over and over again, and I remember the great things you did to try and further Mideast peace, cut down by an assassination of Anwar Sadat, and just horrible things. And I'm wondering, what is your take on whether or not there will ever be a Mideast peace? You see these stories, and every night they have their own version of a World Trade Center in Israel.
That's true. Well, in those days, I had two courageous leaders. I negotiated a treaty between Israel and Egypt 22 and a half years ago, and not one word of it has ever been violated. And we reached some basic agreements there, too, concerning the Palestinian issue. The two basic ones that were agreed to by Menachem Begin and the Israeli parliament was that they would remove their military and political presence from the West Bank and Gaza and not build any more settlements. And on the other side, the Arab community, represented by Sadat, promise that Israel could live and be recognized as in peace and even exchange ambassadors between Egypt and Israel. Those times have been kind of abandoned, but the treaty between Israel and Egypt has never been violated.
Mr. President, where were you on September 11th? And everybody knows where they were. And were you on planes?
I returned from Mongolia on the night of November the 10th. I landed in a New York airport at Kennedy Airport, and I flew down to my home, changed clothes, and I was on the way back to Atlanta the next morning, and we heard about it on the car radio as we approached Atlanta. And when we did get almost to Atlanta, they told us that the airport in Atlanta was closed down for security reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have a chance to see it on television at all until we actually got to the Carter Center. So that's where I was, on the way back to the Carter Center from Mongolia.
Could you even believe, you know, what President Bush thought when he was in his school talking with young kids and they went up and whispered in his ear? I mean,
we thought that a little small plane had inadvertently run into one of the towers, and it was just a passing moment. And then we heard that the second plane had hit, and it slowly dawned on us about the horror of this attack.
Yeah. A quick question about Habitat for Humanity. This is just an incredible program. And how did you get involved with that? And how many houses have you helped to build now, you and your wife?
Well, we got involved in it as soon as I went home from the White House, when Habitat was a tiny little organization. For 18 years, we have built at least one house each year. And the last chapter in my book, Christmas in Plains, I describe as the best Christmas we ever had, because there was a black man named Curtis Jackson who had lived early in his life on my wife's grandfather's farm. He had a leg cut off in a sawmill accident, and his wife was in the hospital almost dying. And they had a horrible house in which to live, so the whole town of Plains agreed to help build a house. And as the Christmas time approached, we decided to finish the house Christmas Eve so they could spend Christmas in a decent home. So all of our children and grandchildren who came to celebrate Christmas just forgot about Santa Claus, and we all joined together, and about midnight Christmas Eve, we finished Curtis and Martha's house, and they were able to spend Christmas Day in a decent home for the first time in their lives. So I think that was one of the nicest Christmases we ever had, and it's part of the kind of work that we still do for Habitat each year.
Mr. Carter, you and your family are amazing Americans, and my hat's off to you. As a former Marine, and you're a former graduate of the Naval Academy, God bless you. I'm privileged to be able to talk with you today. And again, let me mention, you're going to be signing copies of your book, Christmas in Plains, over at Sam's Club in Gilbert, and that'll be at 6:30 on Thursday night.
Thursday night. By the way, my brother was in the Marines, too. Billy was a Marine.
Very good. Well, I was a sergeant in the Marines, and I remember I was we were doing war exercises going to the Philippines from Hawaii, and President Johnson ordered all of us to Da Nang for the Tet Offensive. You know, they ordered all the available troops there.
I remember those days. My oldest son was in Vietnam for 3 years.
Yeah.
Well, good luck to you, and I look forward to seeing you maybe tomorrow night, Thursday night, at Sam's.
Thank you, President Carter. Thank
you
for talking
man.
With us.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it.